Good morning, everyone. My name is Mary Schnackenberg, and it's my privilege to chair this session, which is a continuation of what we're learning about digital libraries. For the possibly only one New Zealand consumer left in the room, this morning's a really important session. We often talk about why is it that this, that or the other service isn't running, and we're often told it's because there isn't enough money. Really, services are about how you want to prioritise services, what services are really important to you, and also the innovation, the effectiveness, the efficiency that goes on in running the service. Now, this morning we're going to hear about two different services, each of which is very innovative and effective and highly valued in their own way, and neither of them runs in New Zealand. So the first service is Beyond Books, Beyond Barriers, creating a self-serve library. And David Vosnarkos is going to talk to us about that. David's from the Association for the Blind of Western Australia. We've even been given a pronunciation guide of David's name, Vosnarkos. David has worked as an occupational therapist at the Association for the Blind of Western Australia since 1994. In the area of adult services. In 2004, David was appointed to the role of Program Manager, Information Systems, which encompasses assistive technology and library services at the association. This role has seen the development of many aspects of both services, including investigating mainstream and specialist equipment for the playback of talking books. So I'm very pleased to introduce to you David Vosnarkos, and I'm sure that we're going to be really interested in what he has to say.
Okay, before I get started, I'm actually going to be sending something around the room that I'd like you all to have a quick feel of it. Pass it to the next row and at least have it back here within 10 minutes if you could. All right? It's not from Vision Australia, so you can't take it home. All right? And I'd also like to put an apology to any New Zealanders that are in the audience today. It seems that we sent the Wallabies to play the All Whites last night, not the Socceroos. And also an apology to everyone on floor four. I got rather excited when we got the second goal. That was me. A lot of what I'll talk about is actually an extension on what I discussed yesterday in the panel on the use of DAISY in different organisations, but we'll expand on that quite a degree. The image that I've got up on the screen is of our new Perrin Centre, which was established in 2007. The association's actually been around now for well over 90 years, but we've been delivering Braille and talking books to West Australians with a vision impairment for at least 30 years. And we're at that cusp now that we have to look at a new mode of delivery. Like a lot of the other libraries, we're still delivering things in cassette. But as you'll find, there's a number of issues that we've got to face with that. The project that we've been looking at over the last couple of years is entitled Beyond Books, Beyond Barriers. And if you break that down, it pretty well explains what we're trying to achieve. We're looking basically at the talking book. Where can we take it? All right, what are our possibilities? We're actually even focusing on what are the different ranges of formats. We've all heard of DAISY, and that's probably the best format for our population with our library. But we're also looking at who else can benefit from talking books. You know, let's think beyond. Who are the what possibilities have we got? And as part of that, we're also considering a self-serve library model. You can do it in a public library. Why don't we consider it with our type of library services? So a little bit of the background. I guess it's been pretty obvious at this conference that there's a right to read. Everyone should be able to access the information that they want to. And I guess it's organisations such as Roundtable that's trying to push that 5% upwards. And it's really great to actually be able to get here and see the passion that people have in trying to get that to happen. We do have a long-standing history in Western Australia of delivering books, but we do a little bit more than that, like the other organisations do. If people have a specialty request, be it a cookbook, technical manual, student examination papers, etc., we also deal with those requests in the format as required. But we're at a point in time where things are changing. I probably don't need to explain to you that suppliers are running out of cassettes. Players are not having cassettes anymore. You get into a car nowadays and they've got an MP3 player. There's no scope there for cassettes. So that gives us quite a bit of a challenge. For the 35,000 odd Western Australians living with a vision impairment, what format are we going to provide them? Which way are we going to go? And as I said in my little bit of a brief, what we're trying to achieve is quite a broad accomplishment. Yes, we want to move our analogue format to something new, but we want to put it into a format that everyone is going to be able to access. The association does have a history of looking at open systems when it comes to providing talking books. This is before my time, I should say, when talking books first came out, people were looking at 4-track. Okay? We made a decision back in the late 70s to actually go to 2-track instead, which meant our borrowers could actually use a standard cassette player to get their talking books. That actually ended up paying off quite well for us because mainstream, all the players tended to be 2-track, and we could get a ready supply of 2-track cassettes. Where's Mary gone? Oh, you are. There you are at the front. We have to acknowledge that Mary Schnackenberg has actually done a number of reports for us and investigations of what's actually going on out in the wider world, around the world, in terms of talking books. Through the research that we've done, we've looked at the systems that Vision Australia have got in place, the Royal New Zealand Foundation for the Blind, the Royal National Institute for the Blind, South African Library for the Blind, Library of Congress, the Canadian National Library for the Blind, and you get a bit of a theme of what's actually happening around the world. It's pretty obvious for everyone that cassettes are on the way out, so we do need to consider something different. But in the research we did, we found that a lot of them have adopted, I guess, a closed system. Okay? Yes, we go for the DAISY format, but a lot have adopted quite a restricted, protected system, so that if I'm an ordinary library borrower and you've perhaps made something that, according to copyright, is available to anyone, I can't access that book. And that was a challenge for us because we wanted to look at something that we could look at a mainstream standard playback device so people could still access the same material. As part of this environmental scan as well, we discovered a number of things. With the baby boomers coming through, there's more of a proficiency with information technology, to be able to adopt it, to be able to go places with it, and not being scared that something may be presented as a computer file. Okay. And there's certainly the willing to embrace it. And of course, the DAISY format. I guess quite a godsend in terms of talking books. I don't need to explain what the DAISY format is, I don't think, do I? Good. So we have a couple of challenges in trying to change our system. And that's looking at how we're actually going to build the digital content. We have an image up there, yes, it's the same slide from yesterday, of our studios. We have 6 functioning studios, like a lot of the other organisations. Some of them are self-monitoring ones as well. And out of those studios, we produce not only our restricted copyright titles, but a number of commercial titles as well. The conversion of existing productions. In the panel yesterday, it was interesting hearing from a number of people how they're actually approaching that. And we had to consider quite a lot of these. Yes, you know, for example, we could have sent, a lot of our titles, thank you, offshore. But for us, I mean, Western Australia is quite an isolated place. We're not a day's drive from Sydney, in case anyone thinks that. So we want to look at how can we get control over how we convert all of our materials. So we looked actually at a system of actually digitising them ourselves. The image that's actually up here is of what they call a graph digitizer. This is an 8x speed, I think I described this yesterday. Digitizer does both sides of a cassette at the same time. And one of the reasons for tackling this as well, it meant we could employ local Western Australians. It also gave us the flexibility that at some point in the future, if we come across some other cassette medium that we need to convert, we've got the ability to actually do it. Then, of course, there's other organisations who've already gone down the path of producing DAISY. They're producing things in digital. So that question of funding, can we look at purchasing titles through different agencies? So the agencies, for example, we've been able to look at, oddly enough, the same ones that you saw up on the slide a few moments ago, Vision Australia, Queensland Rating Service, Royal National Institute for the Blind, etc., etc., etc. Anyone around the world that would possibly put up their hand to say, yes, we'll sell you a digital talking book. Through that, we've been successful in reaching a number of purchasing agreements with different agencies, and we're now buying a selection of titles and adding it to our collection. And the one I alluded to yesterday, a few people probably raised their eyebrows, is the ability to get public domain materials. A lot of us have heard of Project Gutenberg. A lot of us have heard of LibriVox. Well, I guess one of the issues as for people with a vision impairment is, yes, all that material is out there, but how accessible are the websites? How far do I have to search to locate it? So as part of our system with this is actually getting all the MARC records for those particular titles that are available in Australia under copyright, and then putting a system in place to actually actively convert them. Unfortunately, it does mean we have to use synthesised speech, but for some really abstract titles, people don't seem to mind. And I described a tool yesterday called Obi, which we actually deal with the audio recordings as well. That's meant we've then, in terms of a collection, there's something like 40 or 50,000 titles in that public domain. And we are talking about things well out of copyright. You know, your Jules Verne's, your Charles Dickens. But in the space of 1 month of putting those titles up, we discovered there's a number of literature students, who were saying, that's exactly the title I'm after. Don't even get me to try and pronounce what the title was, but it was exactly what they're after. They couldn't find in a bookshop. So then we've been looking at a variety of different delivery trials. Now, people from the Royal Society for the Blind will know all about the audio read product. We've had two trials with them. Back in 2006, we set up a really basic functionality with that, where people were provided with the device, we loaded the books up for them, and off they went. Are most people familiar with the audio read system? Do you know about it? Quick show of hands if you do. All right, for the benefit of those that don't, it's an integrated MP3 system, has a speaker, has approximately 9 buttons, very, very simple. All the buttons provide audio feedback on what you're trying to do. It's not technically a DAISY player, but it does give a degree of navigation over what you're trying to read. And this is one of the first forays for us into the delivery of digital books. And to be honest, by the time that trial finished, no one wanted to give them back. Then we tried something a little more radical with our children, is we provided a small group, approximately 15, with iPod shuffles. And this is one of the mainstream iPod range, basic MP3, doesn't deal with folders. It basically plays back files in a linear fashion. So you start at the start of the book, you go right to the end. There's ways of putting multiple books on, but for our children, we're looking at one book, one player. And those were on a rotating basis. So basically, the child took the book on the iPod shuffle, listen to it. When they returned, we had another one ready and waiting to go back out again. And this meant it was mainstream technology that kids could be sitting there listening to books with. It also meant they looked a little bit cool because they had an iPod shuffle like everybody else. And they're actually quite simple to navigate. Unfortunately, with the iPod shuffles, they moved to a new model which wouldn't have been successful in this trial because with a lot of products, it begin to get smaller and smaller and smaller. Then Audio Read put up its head again. This time we're actually looking at the delivery of online materials. So this time basically we didn't see any of our clients in this trial other than here's the player, let's teach you how to use it, off you go. So our participants in this particular trial were actually downloading the books from home and experiencing, I guess, what they do in Adelaide in accessing the books. What the trial did demonstrate is that it was very, very well received. And again, the same sort of problem. It was very difficult to get the players back. So out of this, we've had to consider, all right, we've looked at different delivery types of methods. We've seen what other people try and do. How do we extend this? How do we look at how can people access the material themselves to make choices independently rather than have to come in and ask a librarian each and every time. So there were three questions that came up for us. Firstly, our current library management system, how was it going to handle it if we adopted this system? Could we adapt the commercially available product that we've got to be able to do online delivery? Or do we need to consider something else? Secondly, what is the broad range of delivery options that we could consider, not just online? And thirdly, what type of playback devices could we consider would be supported and maintained? So firstly, on the library management system, we really had to analyse what our system does now and whether we felt it would actually be adaptable without too much of a financial implication to us for it to do. I mean, the products themselves are expensive to start. A number of organisations here do use the same library system. Now, I won't say good or bad things about it. It's a library system, okay? So as part of this, we want to consider, okay, are there other commercial options available that might meet our particular need? And the research that we've done so far has really shown not what you're aiming to do, other than, yes, rather expensive, but we'd have to modify it anyway. So which got us to consider, what open source alternatives are there that would allow us to actually do this? And one of them that I think a few people in this room are aware of is called OpenBiblio. It's been out for quite some time. It's no longer supported by the developer. But it gives a framework to be able to do a number of these things. And it's just one of many library management systems that's around. The beauty of open source, of course, is they provide you all the code. So if you've got someone with programming experience, you can get into the guts of it and get it to do what you want it to do. And in fact, OpenBiblio, we've been able to adopt to one of the trial projects that I'm going to mention in a few minutes' time. Sorry, screensaver. Playback options. I guess the challenge for us is, yes, if we go digital, what players are we going to provide people? Are we going to be able to get funding to be able to provide everyone of our 2,000 current borrowers with a Daisy player? Or are we going to be able to provide them with some other device? Now, when these playback devices, you know, range from $400 to probably $600 at 2,000 borrowers, where do we seek that funding for? So that is one of our big challenges that we're trying to look at. And that's probably one of the reasons why we've considered multi-format books. So yes, they come out as Daisy, but you can actually play them in a multitude of players. I think the Daisy format and adopting that was a foregone conclusion, because we all understand how it works and what benefit it is to our clients. Hardware and software alternatives. Neil Jarvis yesterday mentioned AMI, which is one of the open source tools. In fact, the association was involved in doing the language pack for it. So if you go to their site and decide you want to download it, you can get it in Australian English. You may think, why would you bother? But for us, that was actually to get our teeth into how to record into Daisy. It was actually a project we could actually take on board. Let's go through it. All we're really doing is changing. Yes, colours does come with a U. Drop the Zs, etc., etc. And getting one of our narrators who has, we'll describe an Australian accent, to produce the Daisy help file and all the self-voicing mechanisms. And the other one, which is actually a pair of specs, is called Emerson. This one keeps coming up for us because we've got quite a bit of a passion in considering options that are across all the computer platforms. Okay? Yes, it runs on Windows if you've got JAWS. Yes, it runs on a Mac, which has got VoiceOver. And I'm a bit of a Linux nut, so it runs on Linux as well. So regardless of your operating system, you've got a software option. And there are, of course, commercial ones as well. The Two Heroes will certainly tell you about their product, which they already have, which does a similar job, and a wonderful job it does. And the device that I just brought around is actually one of the cartridges we're considering. For those of you that may know the system they've got in the US through the National Library of Congress, they actually use a cartridge system. I'll explain that in a little bit more. But what we've got a picture up there is actually of the Victor Reader Stream with a cartridge holder. And basically it's an adapted part that by hook or by crook you can get the cartridge into it. Very difficult to get it wrong. So, as we go through our different ways of actually delivering it online. Through the feedback we've had from the different trials, a number of issues have come up. Firstly, Western Australia is big, and only half of it has got internet access or broadband access. Yes, some areas have got broadband access, but you need to use satellite. And when you're talking about digital talking books that are well over 150 megabytes, you don't want to be downloading that from a satellite because of the expense and because of the time. And that's certainly the feedback we got from a number of our people, particularly the ones that were doing it downloading. A lot of them actually at one point ceased the trial because of what it was doing to their broadband limit. They were going over it with the download of one book. And we'd explained all of that right at the start and said, be wary of where your broadband plan is and what it's possibly going to do. Which has led us into discussions with a major ISP, or internet service provider, in Western Australia to actually be able to host our collection on their server. So if a person is actually linked or has an account with that ISP, the downloads are free. All right. For example, I'm on a 1 gigabyte a month. That's about as much as I need. But I could theoretically go on there and download gigabytes worth of books without being charged, without everything slowing down for us. A big exciting one that we're about to launch, probably next month I would say, is actually a physical kiosk design. So again, online, as I said, in some places there just isn't access to the internet. And we're trying to look at ways that people can actually probably engage back into their community. So why not provide a kiosk in a strategic spot where a person can go with their preferred playback device or storage device to obtain their books? So from that, taking the open source option, we're looking at a kiosk that obviously has a customizable web browser, web portal. So we're actually stripping down a particular web browser so you can adapt its font size, its color contrasting. We're looking at one that actually has a built-in screen reader and also has the simplest of interfaces as well. And oddly enough, this one comes up. The guts of this is actually an Apple Mac Mini, which actually meets a lot of those criteria. And we have a staff member on board who actually designed a cut-down web engine called Bovine. I don't know why he chose Bovine. I really, really don't know. So very shortly, we're about to release 5 of these kiosks around Western Australia, 4 of them in the metro area, and then 1 of them in a regional centre. And we're looking at the sort of areas in prominent community centres such as public libraries, post offices, telecentres, the places that as people you'd expect to try and get to. You need to get to a post office to deliver letters. All right, telecentre, you may go there for some other community group. Well, why not, while you're there, get your talking books? But there's no denying, again, with the rural and remote issues in Western Australia, that some people are still not going to be living next to a town. They may be hundreds of kilometres from the nearest town or telecentre or post office. So we need to look at another option. And that's where these cartridges come in. The cartridges were actually designed, they're actually a flash drive, but designed with a specific housing so that someone with a physical disability is going to be able to grab it, slot it into their device, the big round hole, arthritic finger, I can pull it out. And the beauty of looking at a rewritable system is, in terms of environmental, we don't get rid of them, we reuse them. So we're looking at a system, again, like with the iPod shuffles, we've got 2 of them. So there's one that goes out with the person's books, multiple books on them, and then there's a second one waiting to actually go out again. So this we're looking at actually a way of reusing some of the resources we already have in the cassette collection. At the moment, all of our cassettes go out in containers, 4 cassettes to a container. Probably people are familiar with those in New Zealand as well. With this, we're sending out 1 cartridge. But we've already got the yellow containers. How can we modify them to contain 1 cartridge? So in terms of familiarity, the same containers are turning up at people's doorsteps. So getting on to our project outcomes, at the moment it's actually quite early. But we do have about 20 of our borrowers already accessing digital talking books from our online collection. So the public domain material that I've described is actually already online that people can access now. In fact, all of you could log on and get the public domain materials if you really, really wanted to. The restricted content is up there as well through some security protocols. Again, with our clients being registered, we can identify them, they can then download those particular books. The self-service kiosk, as I mentioned, is being rolled out very, very shortly. And the feedback, at least in terms of how we're going with the online delivery, is the anecdotal feedback suggests this is providing benefits far greater than those realised by our current postal system. So looking at a conclusion, I guess it's quite obvious to us around the world that everyone is moving towards an online delivery method. But for us, with the issues that we have in Western Australia because of internet access, the rural and remote issues, we need to consider something that's going to be able to get books out to people in the easiest possible way. We want to be able to look at how to link back in with mainstream libraries, because we all have content we want to share, and we want people to be able to go to their local library to access the same material. The different emerging technologies, well, what we've talked about so far, and probably what Tony's going to be talking about with their playback devices, is leading us into a very exciting time of what's available. When we looked at a lot of the playback devices, you know, one of the issues we have in Australia and probably New Zealand as well, there's not a great width of options available. I mean, in terms of portable ones, we're about to get a second one invited into Australia. And what we're really wanting to consider is, again, with the way we produce our talking books, is, all right, it's not going to be dependent on a particular player. You want to access our services, you want to access our books. We're not going to tie you down to one particular player to be able to do it. We want you to be able to access information your way. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, David. I found that really interesting. Thank you. I'm sure that the audience has questions for you, so I'll leave it up to the audience. Put up your hand, and I'm sure David will.
Tony shall find you.
Yes.
Peter Fogg from ANU. David, I was wondering whether those cartridges were developed in cooperation with a vendor, or whether you've just bought them off the shelf. If so, where are they available?
Okay. They're available through the Association for Blind of Western Australia. The system was actually developed in the United States as part of an overall system for the National Library of Congress. But the cartridges themselves, anyone can source. Okay. But because of their shape and the format, it does require a particular port to go into. What I didn't explain in my presentation, though, is although it's a flash drive, there's a simple lead that goes from that into any other playback device that has a USB port.
Yes, that's what looked appealing.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes.
Hi, it's Veronica from Foundation of the Blind in New Zealand.
Hi,
David, a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Without giving away commercial secrets, can you give me some idea of, talking about public domain books,
Did
you do some analysis on taking the public domain books and putting it in your library compared to, say, you talked about a lot of public domain books are what we would call classic novels, and you talked about buying from RNIB, and I wondered what the comparison was between purchasing an audio, a human narrated book from RNIB versus buying, you know, getting something from public domain, converting it to synthetic speech, and then distributing it through your library.
Okay, this does raise that question of what books are preferable in our collection. Our preference is always for human narrated. So if we can find a human-narrated one, we go with it. But what we do recognise, a lot of people are looking for books quickly. They want it now. And they've not actually expressed any concern of whether it's synthesised or whether it's not. I just want the information. I'll decide in my own mind how I interpret that. So in terms of the public domain one, it was basically, there's the MARC records. We know they're available. We've got a system in place to be able to convert them. Let's just put it in place. We haven't actually converted everything of that. It's actually an on-demand. So if someone comes to us and says, oh, yes, I like Charles Dickens' Tale of Two Cities, that is there, they put their request in, we convert it, email them, there it is, ready for your download. Our preference is still for human narrated. We certainly wouldn't be shifting everything over to synthetic voice for that reason.
And my second question was, delivery methods, you've got download and the cartridges. Can your members get cassettes and CDs?
We're bypassing CDs altogether. So I guess where we've been positioned and what time we're coming into this, we've been able to analyse what everyone else is doing and looking at, this is some of the pros and cons of going for the CD delivery method. Do we actually want to go that way? You know, they've been around for 20-odd years already, 20, 30 years. Do we want to invest the time and money in tackling that? And personally, I've got environmental issues with CDs as well. I prefer something that's rewritable, which we can quite easily get back, put back on and go back out, which unfortunately CDs just don't do. I do understand why organisations went with it. It's certainly a big step up from cassettes. At the moment, all of our borrowers can still get cassettes, but because of where we're going in terms of supply of cassettes, maintenance of the machines, at some point we're going to have to draw the line like a lot of organisations do. It's just going to become too expensive, too labour-intensive to actually manage that. With our delivery system, we're actually looking at a cut-off point rather than having two systems working in parallel, which is going to be a bit of a challenge, to say the least.
David, John Simpson, Vision Australia.
Yes,
thank you for your presentation, most enlightening. Can you quantify this for us a little bit in terms of size of your membership, the size of your collection, those sorts of things, just to give us a sense of what you're dealing with in that quantum?
Of where we are? Okay, we have approximately 2,000 borrowers. There's a population of about 35,000 people in Western Australia with a vision impairment, according to that we know. Okay, that we know, because we don't have to register, we don't know exactly. We have about 7,000 analog titles already, and so far I think we've purchased and recorded up to about 1,000 digital titles in the DAISY format. So those are the sort of numbers. Conversion is one, yeah, and for that, I mean, we did make the decision early on to actually analyse what books people were wanting, but we were basing that on what they were wanting in the analog format. And when we came to having it available digitally, suddenly, no, we don't want those. They're not the ones we're actually after this, 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 and this. So we've had to then do an active on-demand. And that process for us is, that's about a 24-hour turnaround as well. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Yes, towards the back.
Ross Ackley. I just wondered about the self-serve kiosks. Are they truly accessible? Can I just go in there without any vision? And what do I do?
Right. Well, the way we envisage this, they have a keyboard, have a screen. As the moment you find the port to put your cartridge in or your USB port, it will start talking to you.
Okay.
Right from that point. So we're developing it to that degree. Longer term, what we'd like to be able to do is so that you don't actually have any physical interaction with it. So if someone comes up that's in a wheelchair, for example, and wants to transfer the books onto their augmentative communication device, that we do it wirelessly. So it's based on proximity from the particular kiosk. That's adding a couple of other challenges because of the size of the book.
I really reckon that's excellent because it really takes dependency away from agencies, and I reckon it's excellent.
Mm. I mean, for us, the choice of a book really should be a personal thing. I often feel a bit funny when I go up to the librarian and say, I'd like this book on macrame design. I should be getting something on cars and mechanics. No, I want that book.
David, it's Rob from Vision Australia.
Yes, Rob.
Thanks for the presentation. David, what do you currently have in place for accessibility of literature for children from, say, 0 to 18? And of the 2,000, what membership would exist of children and families?
That's a very good question. We'd probably be talking, this is right off the top of my head, I could be wildly, wildly out. Probably 200 to 300 at least. It's probably much higher than that. But like a lot of the other organisations, the bulk of people that use our service come to us as a result of age-related vision conditions. So it'd be the same story as you guys, no doubt. Same sort of ratio. Looks like no other questions.
Oh, well, I wonder if I could pop a question in.
Oh, okay.
What about any relationship with the Western Australian State Library? and Overdrive, for example. Do you do you publicise access to Overdrive? Do you facilitate it? Do you send people to the State Library or their local public library at all?
Well, I guess in the first instance, yes. Because a lot of our rural and remote clients, you know, that's their first point of call. And our books, of course, at the moment are still available through interlibrary loan. So if I live in Meekatharra, I can't get to us. I might choose not to become a member of the association. I'll go through my local library instead. Right. So we do have a handful going through there. The Overdrive system, I don't think anyone within Western Australia has taken that system on board at this point. We have an active dialogue with the State Library, though. And we're really trying to get them engaged in this project as well for that sort of purpose, because they're also going through a major conversion process of all of their old materials, resource materials. And they're also quite concerned, I guess, with the Indigenous population, with the recording of, you know, languages, so they don't want anything to be lost, oral histories, exactly. So with the technology we're coming up with and the format it can go out with, it's merging a few synergies there. So,
well, thank you very much, David, for your presentation this morning. Now, somewhere on a table nearby is the ubiquitous
a
gift.
Thank you, Mary.
Which is labelled in Braille, so I hope, at least I'm pretty sure they put Braille labels on everything,
lovely,
I think.
Oh, Chardonnay.
Yes, so as well as in print. So one day you might learn Braille too.
I did it once, mate.
Good for you. So thank you very much for your time, David, and for a very interesting presentation. And again, there's just different choice, different ways of approaching things. Well done. Thank you very much.
Nice. Thank you.